Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. 14 states, including California, have refused outright to turn over any voter information to President Trump's commission investigating voter fraud. Dozens more states say they will only release limited public information, saying the request violates privacy or state laws. Last week, Commission Vice Chair and Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach sent letters to all 50 secretaries of state asking for things like names, addresses, party affiliations, and the last four digits of Social Security numbers. That prompted a lawsuit this week, claiming the request violates privacy rights. We look at the latest developments surrounding the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, how that data could be used, and concerns that the commission attempts to legitimize the president's baseless claim that millions of people voted illegally last fall, and also that the commission could lead to voter suppression. Joining us is Jessica Huseman. She's reporter for ProPublica, covering voter rights and fair elections. Good morning to you, Jessica Huseman.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Just get us up to speed, if you could. So as I mentioned, Kris Kobach sent letters to all 50 states requesting very specific voter information. And since that letter, how many states are we at right now who have refused?
I think your number was correct. We're at 14 that have outright refused. There are several states that are still deciding what information to turn over, and a lot of states have that contingent on Kobach answering a few questions that he has not yet answered, that many expected him to answer in the initial letter, but the initial letter was quite vague. I think that it's really important for your listeners to understand that their letter itself only requested publicly available information, and in that sense, many states are fully complying with this letter because they don't have a choice as to whether or not to. In the majority of states, the voter rolls are public information. Depending on who you are, you can file a public records request, and you can get that information yourself if you're willing to pay, in many cases, a fee. And so many states, if Kobach's commission follows those protocols, do not have any authority to tell them that they cannot have that data. So I think it's important for readers to understand that many states, depending on where they live, may not have any choice but to comply.
But my understanding is that it's an ask by Kobach, not necessarily a mandatory.
Right. So it's an ask, but Kobach's office, or the Presidential Commission on Election Integrity, they've assured me that they will go through the proper protocols to make public records requests in the states that have told them that they need to follow their proper protocols. And if those public records requests are placed, then many states won't have any choice but to turn over the data that is publicly available.
Even if there are other existing laws that, say, limit the sharing of Social Security numbers or, say, military status,
right,
or so on.
But in most states, that information is not publicly available by law. If you read the text of the letter that Kobach sent out, while it requested things like Social Security data and military status, it specifically requested that states only send what was publicly available. In no state that I'm aware of is Social Security information or military status publicly available on a voter roll. And so states were never going to comply with that to begin with. So in the event that a state has a publicly available voter roll that can be released to a party like this, then they will have no choice but to turn over a publicly available voter roll to Kobach, as long as he follows the proper protocol for requesting the data.
So essentially what you're saying is that this commission will get its hands on a lot of information.
Yes, it will get its hands on quite a lot of information.
And how will this information be used?
So yesterday, I released an article on ProPublica in which the Vice President's office, which is running the show here, confirmed to me that they're going to use this voter roll data and run it against federal databases. And they would not specify which databases those were, but we can make a healthy guess that one of them will be the database that is maintained by DHS of non-citizens who are currently moving through the immigration process in the United States. Because one of the things that Kobach has always wanted to do is see if there are non-citizens on the voter rolls.
And why do you say Kobach has always wanted to do
has for quite some time claimed with no evidence at all that non-citizens vote frequently in the United States. He also believes that people are double registered on the voter rolls and vote twice all the time. Neither of those things are true. In fact, academic study after academic study has found them not to be true. But Kobach continues to claim that. So it won't surprise me, or I think anyone who follows this information closely, if Kobach chooses to run the list of voter rolls against the DHS list of non-citizens. But that's going to be a hugely flawed process. So what is publicly available and what will be given to Kobach are lists that include things like your first name, your last name, maybe your full date of birth, but in most cases just the year, perhaps your address, and perhaps how many times you voted in the past. But that information is not enough to make a confirmable match in any database. There are plenty, for example, of Jose Rodriguez's born in 1970 who are citizens of the United States, who are legally registered to vote, but those will get hit every single time on a DHS list when they run them against each other. So experts tell me that there will be thousands of false positives on the type of data analysis that Kobach's team is attempting to do. And I have heard a sort of very stern criticism of such a plan from both Democratic and Republican secretaries of state across the United States.
So just tell us what happens when somebody comes up as, if their name gets flagged. The defense of Mike Pence's spokesman in your piece was that, we can't actually purge voters from the rolls, so they won't be harmed if they actually have if they are a citizen and can vote.
Sure. So there are two things that can happen. So first, and this was pointed out to me by a Republican Secretary of State in Alabama, the more false matches you have, it increases the chance that you will be unfairly purged from the roll, regardless of whether or not this commission has the opportunity to directly purge you from that roll. Mm. If that list is passed on to the state, it increases the error rate because the original list that they're dealing with is full of errors. But number two, and probably most importantly, is that this will allow the Kobach Commission to overstate the possibility of voter fraud in the United States. There is no question in my mind, or any expert that has studied this, that there will be thousands of false positives. And this will allow Kobach, as he has done in the past, to take bad information and exaggerate the potential for fraud in the United States. And the real harm here is that people who agree with him will be able to use this bad data to convince the public that voter fraud is happening and that they should pass laws that, in effect, restrict voter rights based on that data.
We're talking with Jessica Huseman, a reporter for ProPublica, covering voter rights and fair elections. We're talking about the Trump administration's controversial Voter Fraud Commission, its recent requests for voter data, lawsuits that have been filed against it as well. I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook. You can tweet us at KQED Forum, and you can also email us at forum@kqed.org. I mentioned the lawsuit there, Jessica Huseman. Can you tell us what attempts are being made right now to try to stop this commission from getting its hands on the data?
There are a couple. I think that the most notable one was filed by a privacy group called Epic that attempts to stop the request because the Kobach Commission has not taken proper steps to ensure that this database will be appropriately maintained in a way that maintains privacy. There are a couple of And from my understanding, no state has yet turned over their data. So there are a couple of states that said that they will, but no state has yet done that. So there is some time here for things to happen that would prevent them from turning over the data. I think that really what all these lawsuits come back to is that if you read the text of the letter, it's actually strikingly vague. It asks states for all of this information,
yes,
for their voter roll. It also asks seven questions, which I think not a lot of people are paying enough attention to. So the letter asks states seven questions that are incredibly broad. So it asks them, for example, to detail all of the voter fraud convictions that have happened since 2000, which is information that the Secretary of State's office, to which received the letters, would not maintain. Those would be maintained by district attorneys all over their states. So they're actually asking for an incredibly broad amount of information. And the letter itself says that any information sent to the commission could be made public. It doesn't say anything beyond that. It gives them an email address to send the information to and also a secure box to send the information to. It does not specify to which states should send the information. And then in a response letter to the Epic lawsuit, Kobach says, oh, no, we were never going to make the voter rolls public. We were only going to make the narratives public from the first seven questions. But the letter itself does not say that. The letter itself provides no assurances to states that their data will be kept secure. It provides no specification for what data will be made public. And the initial response that I got from secretaries of state across the country was, there is a reason we don't have a national voter roll, and it appears that they're trying to make one and throw it up on the internet. It is only now that Kobach is trying to roll those things back.
Yes, just significant concerns that you've got this vulnerable trove of information that, you know, could just be so appetizing to cyber criminals. Let me ask you this, though. Skip writes, shouldn't we be investigating foreign interference in our elections, be it by Russians or illegal aliens or anybody? The reason there's no evidence is because we haven't looked, so let's look already. What's your response to Skip? Is this commission going to look at Russian interference in our elections?
You know, I've gotten no indication that they will. I have asked several questions of the vice president's spokesperson. I have sent several questions into the press office. Those have been largely ignored. And so I have no indication that they will ask about foreign intervention in elections at all. There was one sort of one-off question in the questions that were asked in the letter about voter intimidation and things like that. But the majority of the letter focused on voter fraud, which if you ask any expert in voter fraud or any expert in election administration, that is not their major concern right now. Their major concern right now is in the integrity of our elections from a cybersecurity standpoint, which the letter also vaguely touches on, but it's very clear that it's an afterthought. And so, you know, I don't get the sense that this commission will be making recommendations on cybersecurity, nor do I get the sense that the commission is prepared to do that. None of the people, to the best of my knowledge, that sit on that commission have any expertise in cybersecurity whatsoever. And in fact, there is a bill moving through Congress right now that would defund the Election Assistance Commission, which makes recommendation on the security of voting machines and the security of your voter rolls. And so it's a little bit disingenuous for the committee to say we're going to focus on any international interference, because we've gotten no indication that they will beyond one question in the letter, which really is about cybersecurity and not foreign interference.
So if you had to make the most compelling argument for the value of this commission, what would it be?
You know, I mean, I think that voter integrity is very important. And if the commission does, in fact, take voter intimidation and cybersecurity as seriously as they take voter fraud, there might be some interesting national recommendations that come out of this committee. Unfortunately, I don't get the sense that that is true. Those are not the things that Mr. Kobach has historically focused on. Those are not the things that he appears to be focusing on now. Those are not the things that the letter appears to place the most emphasis on. I think that election integrity is important. Voter fraud does happen. It just does not happen at the rate at which folks like Mr. Kobach claim that it does. And it does need to be stopped. And there are things that we can do as a country to quell those concerns. But it remains to be seen how the committee will appropriately deal with those.
Well, let's hear from Alex in Palo Alto. Hi, Alex.
Hi. My question is about people who are registered or have registered to vote in multiple places. So when I lived in Massachusetts, I was registered there. When I lived in L.A., I was registered there. And I'm registered again in multiple places in the Bay Area from where I've lived. So So what are they going to do with our data? Thanks. I'll take my answer off here.
Alex, thanks. Jessica Hoosman?
I mean, I can only really speculate, given that they've not said exactly what databases they will be running them against. But, you know, one of the things that folks like Mr. Kobach and Hans von Spakovsky, who sits on the commission, have always been concerned about is the ability for folks to vote in more than one state because they remain registered in more than one state. And one thing that I think most people don't understand is that states don't communicate with each other very well in terms of who's on their voter rolls. So, for example, I moved to New York from Texas several years ago, and I just got myself removed from the Texas voter roll not too long ago. But that doesn't mean that I was voting in Texas as well. I was only voting in New York. And so I think that people like your caller who have moved to several different states don't realize that they are actively registered to vote in more than one state, and that they actually have to take certain steps in many states to remove themselves from that role. Otherwise, it could take several years for the state to appropriately purge you from the voting roll. So it may be that they run these voter rolls against each other, although California has refused to turn over the data. And say that there are voters registered in more than one state, and this is a potential for fraud, and they could highlight that as a problem. But, you know, again, this commission does not have the power to purge voters themselves. They would turn that information over to the states, and the states would make that determination. So hopefully there's a little bit of a fail-safe there. But that is what they would do, is that they would check to see if people are cross-registered state to state to state. But again, they're going to get a lot of false positives. So
and they would describe that, as you were saying, as a potential for fraud, which could overstate.
A potential for fraud. Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, if folks like your caller, whose name is Alex, right, there are thousands of Alexes that have probably moved from Massachusetts to California or from California to Texas in the last couple of years. Some of them probably share the same last name and birthday, which is far more common than I think people realize. So they are going to get quite a lot of false matches in this process, which states would then have to sort out if the data was turned over to states.
Well, Morgan tweets, can you explain again why there would be false positives? We touched on some of this, but do you want to just, you know, highlight anything else that we haven't?
Of course. So, like, let's take the example of the list that DHS maintains of non-citizens. So there are hundreds of thousands of people by the same name that are citizens whose names, even though they're not the same person, would also appear on that list. So if we talk about somebody named Jose Rodriguez, who was born in 1970, there are plenty of Jose Rodriguez's born in 1970 who are citizens across this country who are legally able to vote. But there are probably several Jose Rodriguez's born in 1970 who are on that list of non-citizens. And so when you run a match between this list and the list of registered voters, you're going to come up with a lot of matches for Jose Rodriguez, born in 1970, who is a citizen, and Jose Rodriguez, who is not the same Jose Rodriguez, who is not a citizen, who is on this list. And how are you supposed to sort out, given the limited information that is on voter rolls, if that is the same Jose Rodriguez? It's going to be very difficult to do. And states have Florida, for example, tried to do this in 2012. They tried to run all of their voters in Florida against a list provided to them by DHS, which is a much smaller list than within the list that Kobach would be running. And they got so many false positives that their governor was forced to scrap the attempt and apologize for doing it because there were so many citizens who were highlighted because they had the same name and birthday as someone on the immigration list. So that's the kind of problem that we're going to be dealing with.
Well, David tweets, the GOP shamelessly pushes voter suppression nationwide. Courts provide some relief, but the Merrick Garland non-appointment shows that the GOP has a strategy to tilt the judiciary too. Jessica Hoosman, are people who are citizens lawfully able to vote, are they less likely to vote if they believe that, you know, the voter rolls are being tampered with, or it's just going to be harder?
It's hard to say. I mean, like, I'm not aware of a very good study that has tested voter confidence and your ability to vote or your willingness to vote based on how secure you think the voter rolls are. I mean, the indications that you would or would not vote have much more to do with how strongly you feel about a candidate than how strongly you feel about the integrity of the voter roll, for example. So I can't really speak to that either way.
Well, Adriana writes, please explain purge in detail. I re-register every election cycle just to be sure a database glitch has not dropped me from the rolls. Were I to be purged, would that keep me from re-registering? Or is the problem that voters would not know until they showed up on election day that they'd been purged?
So, I mean, that varies from state to state, the way that purges happen. But generally what happens is that the state will send a letter to an address that you have on file saying, please prove to us that you still live at this address and that you are who you say you are, usually by filling out some basic personal information and mail this back to us. And if we receive it, then you'll stay on the voter roll. If we don't get it back, then you might be removed. And so it may be that a person never gets this letter or they have moved and they end up being purged. I think there are a lot of people who don't realize that they have to re-register to vote every time they move, even if they're moving within the same state, for example. So people can get purged without realizing it. But to the best of my knowledge, most states do make an attempt to contact you before they would remove your name from a voter roll.
Well, let's hear from our callers, Frank in Mill Valley. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. I'd like to pick up on this idea of the tweet about voter suppression. I would suggest that what you're talking about here, and probably Ms. Hausman knows better than I, is sort of stage two of the Republican attempts to suppress voters, first by using voter ID and thrown out in court. And the point I wanted to raise is, to my knowledge, not a single court, even those that have allowed some portion of the voter ID laws to go into effect, have found any consistent or large-scale voter fraud. It is all accidental and incidental. And I'm wondering whether in contacting the Attorney General, Ms. Hausman, did any of them talk about using the results of these cases as part of their reason for resisting, i.e. that it's nothing more than a partisan attempt to further purge the rolls. In Florida, for example, they didn't change their tune until the court told them they had to, because they'd purged so many thousands of legitimate voters.
Frank, thanks. Jessica Guzman, do you want to talk about Attorney General justification happening in the courts?
I think that the secretaries of states are the ones that are actually in charge of handing over these voter rolls for the most part. But I have not talked to them specifically about whether they are using the court reasoning. But I know that many Democratic secretaries of state and Democratic governors have pointed out that there is a long history of voter suppression by using techniques like this, and that factors into their response. I will say that it is true that a court has never found widespread evidence of voter fraud of the type that would be found in turning over the voter rolls like this. There has never been evidence of mass voter fraud from a voter registration standpoint. And that is really important. You know, I spent, for example, quite a long time covering Texas's voter ID law. I had a piece come out that sort of explained the failures from start to finish of that law a couple of months ago. And the state of Texas could never provide the court with evidence of voter fraud. They, in fact, at several points said that they didn't need to provide evidence of voter fraud because other states had said that just the risk of that was enough to pass a voter ID law. So your caller is correct. The courts have never found good evidence that mass voter fraud exists. Most states, when passing voter ID laws, don't even try to provide evidence of mass voter fraud. The Supreme Court, for example, when ruling on Indiana's voter ID law, said that they didn't need to provide evidence of mass voter fraud, that the idea that they were keeping the election safe and protecting election integrity was quite enough. And so states have relied on that reasoning to pass voter ID laws. But no, they have never been able to provide hard and fast evidence that mass fraud is happening.
Well, what are the studies that the administration cites most frequently? If you could just briefly remind us what they are.
So the Trump administration has relied on a couple of studies. that are both flawed. So they have relied on one study that found that there was a high percentage of non-citizens who told a survey that they were registered to vote. But that study has been debunked numerous times, but still continues to be used on channels like Fox News as evidence that voter fraud exists. That study was flawed. The question was asked in such a way that citizens regularly mark themselves as non-citizens.
Right.
So even the authors of that study have said that that is not a reliable study. The second study that they rely on is a study from Pew Charitable Trust that was done by David Becker. In it, they say that there is like this high consistency of people being registered in more than one state, which is a problem that we already knew. But Becker himself has come out and said that that is not evidence of fraud, that there is no indication that people who are registered in more than one state, which thousands of people are, actually then vote in more than one state, which would be fraud. So both of the studies that they most frequently rely on have been debunked in very different ways.
Well, Stephen writes, we have been told that the greatest security of our voter rolls comes from them being dispersed over many different disconnected systems. Having them aggregated in one system makes them inherently more vulnerable, which gets to the point you were making earlier, Jessica Guzman. But another listener writes, related to privacy concerns, are my last four Social Security digits going to be on this list and made available to anybody who wants to see it? I mean, that remains to be seen, right?
Well, no, I actually...
But you're saying that Social Security in general is not likely to make it there.
No, I think that question has been answered. So yeah. I am not aware of a single state that makes the last four digits of a Social Security number publicly available. Given that the letter only asked for publicly available information, I do not foresee the states turning that over. And the Vice President's office has since told me that they would anonymize any personal information that they get. They have not specified how. They have not said that in any official format. They've just said that to me by email, so I can't tell you any more than that. But I don't think that it's likely that the last four digits of your Social Security number will wind up online because of this process.
Now, you mentioned how Democratic Secretaries of State have been really balking at the request, the deadline of July 14th to get this information there. It is a bipartisan commission, though, is it not?
It's a bipartisan commission. Right now, there used to be five Democrats on the commission. One has since resigned. The Vice President's office told me it was because of the breadth of work that was needed for the commission, but that person also admitted prior to resigning that he had no experience in election administration whatsoever. So,
among the Democrats, are they supporters of, say, stronger voter ID laws?
I don't have any indication of that. I mean, the problem really is that they have very little experience in election administration for the most part compared to the Republicans who sit on that panel. The Democratic Secretary of State of Maine sits on that panel, but he's the only one with a history of that. There's a lawmaker also from Arkansas who has...
Well, Jessica Guzman, we'll have to end it there. Jessica Guzman, reported with ProPublica covering voter rights and fair elections. Thank you. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.